Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome into the NFL Front Office Show. Good evening. I'm your host, Brian Hughes. Alongside me, I have my co-host, Mr. Norm Arendez. Norm, how you doing tonight?
Pretty excited. While the world's shut down, we at least have football. Thank God.
Well, Norm, we have a lot to talk about tonight. We've got the start of free agency. We've got to talk about the draft. We've got to talk about the players who've been franchised. We were going to get into our draft needs and such. We're trying to get all of our free agency and draft needs laid out. I apologize for missing last week, but because of the COVID-19, unfortunately, everything has been crazy around the globe. So without any further ado, Norm, let's quickly talk about the news and notes from the last week. Free agency did start this morning at 12 o'clock, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Several very big-name NFL players did receive a franchise tag. We will get into that. Free agency did start. A few big-name players have been signed. There's also been several trades. The NFL announced that they are going to have the NFL draft. However, the draft will not have any spectators, essentially. There will be no public interaction, nothing set up for the public. So we will get into that as well. We're also going to talk about several big-name players that have been cut that hasn't really, you know, moved the needle because there's so many other huge deals that have come down here on day one. And there has been, like I talked about, a few different trades. So I think it's only right that we look at these trades, we evaluate the trades, and try to, you know, whether you like the trade or you hate the trade, try to understand the trade from both teams' perspective so we can hopefully provide that fan base some perspective as to why their particular team, favorite team, may have made the moves they did. But without any further ado, Norm, I want to start off with, let's talk about the two trades that took place today, the two massive trades that took place. Actually, you know what, let's go ahead and make that three trades. So it was three big trades today, the first being the Falcons trading for tight end Hurst from the Baltimore Ravens after they had lost Hooper.
Hooper.
They traded for Hayden Hurst, yeah. Second trade was the DeAndre Hopkins and David Johnson trade going from the Cardinals to the Texans. And then obviously the 49ers traded DeForest Buckner to the Colts for pick compensation. But let's start with the first one, and that is, let's talk about the Falcons. They kind of lost out, if you will, on the number one tight end in this market. Hooper ends up leaving on a $43 million deal, understandably. But the Falcons do bounce back, losing Austin Hooper, and they are able to secure Hayden Hurst. The compensation was they gave up a fourth-round pick from Baltimore. So essentially Baltimore gave up a fourth round pick and the Falcons gave up a second round pick, and Hayden Hurst went from Baltimore to the Falcons. So essentially the Falcons got Hayden Hurst and a fourth. Baltimore gets a second, which equates it out to a lower fourth, because the Falcons are lower second because they were picking at the top of the draft. What's your thoughts on that trade in general? Do you think it's a good move for the Falcons? Because there is some names on the free agent market still. What's your thoughts on that particular trade?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I kind of saw Hayden Hurst. I thought the Patriots would make a push for him. He was buried on their depth chart. Mark Andrews had a terrific year last year, and he's kind of their main guy. And I forget the they had another pretty solid tight end in the mix there. So Hayden Hurst is a first-round talent, really good player, obviously, if you look at his background. But they were looking to deal him, and they were looking to get the most they could for him. So I feel like you know, when you look at how some of the other trades work out on players that are going to be leaving, if you do a sign and or if you do a tag and trade type thing, I think a second round pick compensation was pretty darn good. It's basically like saying, hey, we drafted this guy in a first round, late first round, and hey, our other guys ended up working out. So hey, we got our second round higher up on the board draft pick back. You know, so it wasn't a bad deal for Baltimore. You know, what's interesting with Atlanta, and they fill the void that Hooper left, so that's a win there. But my question is, why not pay Hooper? You know, I haven't looked at the numbers compared to what Hayden Hurst has signed for and what Hooper signed for. If it's a money thing, then there's your answer. But interesting how, you know, if they could make the numbers work, why would they let Hooper walk and then bring in Hurst?
Well, I can tell you this, Norm. So Hayden Hurst is still on his rookie contract. He was just drafted in the first round of 2018, all SEC player from South Carolina. So he's still on his rookie deal. And being that he was drafted in the first round, you are going to get that fifth-year option, which for a tight end is relatively inexpensive. It's going to be less than $10 million a year. So basically, they traded a second-round pick to get this guy for 3 years. Now, Austin Hooper, I'm not taking anything away from him, but he just got $43 million for 3 years. He's making $15 million, essentially, $14 million a year. And my problem with that is, and this is just my opinion, but I actually think Hayden Hurst is the better tight end. I think Atlanta nailed this trade. But we do have a couple callers, Norm. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of free agency questions. I'm sure a lot of people want to dive into these topics. But first and foremost, let me bring in my brother from another mother, Mr. TP Timeless, coming in the building. How you doing tonight?
Took off the blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped inside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. I'm mad, actually, right now, to be totally honest. And none of my teams have anything to do with it, but I'm furious right now.
What's that, Ty?
Oh, you didn't get to it yet. We didn't get to it yet.
Okay.
I'm glued to the chair.
I can tell you what it is. He's furious about the whole DeAndre Hopkins. So we can just let the elephant out of the room.
And you know what?
No, I'm going to be fair. I want to be fair.
Let's the pressure cooker's not quite done yet boiling, boys. let's stick to the topic at hand. So, Ty, tell me your thoughts on the Hayden Hurst deal. We were just talking about it. Hayden Hurst, 2018 first-round pick, goes to Atlanta and for a second, and Baltimore essentially sends back Baltimore gets a second in compensation. Atlanta gets Hayden Hurst and a fourth. What's your thoughts?
I'm going to obviously tell the truth here. I think Baltimore did something very bad in sending Hayden Hurst away. Hayden Hurst, like, kind of, like, disguised Mark Andrews a lot. And Mark Andrews being a tight end with receiver speed, it helps. Like, and then you got a guy underneath that's big, but he could run pretty good to be in Hayden Hurst. Now it's kind of like all the focal point will be on Mark Andrews. And I think this could actually set that passing game back, unless Lamar really is just the magician or the wizard that we see win the MVP. Atlanta, the situation with Atlanta, like, they've underachieved for the past two or three seasons, and they dumped a good amount of money into Julio. So it's like Hayden's going to have to go there and set fire to that offense. If he doesn't, then this is going to be a season loss with them letting go of Hooper. And then if Hayden doesn't come down there, it doesn't make a difference, too. So this is like must-see TV to see what Atlanta looks like this season in a jam-packed NFC South.
So, Ty, we do have a caller, but I did want to ask you, because I know that you watch quite a bit of college tape, so I'm sure you're familiar with Hurst, being that he was an SEC guy. My evaluation was that essentially Austin Hooper was an undersized tight end that got open because of the scheme and the people around him. I actually think Hayden Hurst is a better player. So I think
I agree.
Slam dunk. Yeah, and now you've got Julio and Calvin Ridley on the outside. I think Baltimore fans are going to see exactly what they were missing now that Hayden Hurst is in Atlanta. That's my thoughts. But, guys, we do have another caller calling in, caller from the 518, calling in. How you doing tonight? Thank you for calling the NFL Free-for-All.
Hey, gentlemen, what's going on? Trouble's back.
Oh, it's Matthew.
Nope. It's
how you doing tonight, man?
That's controversy. That ain't Matthew.
Oh, man. Look at Mr. Greenwood. I haven't heard you in a while, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. I just thought it would be a good time. Right,
well,
maybe it's an all right day to stop back in.
Well, hey, we appreciate it. Me and my new compadre, Norm, we've been holding it down here. But what's your thoughts on the Hayden Hurst trade? I'm sure you heard kind of our thoughts. What's your thoughts on it?
So only one other trade, I think this is going to be something that turns out to be pretty good for both teams, and more importantly, very good for Hayden Hurst, because he wasn't the guy in Baltimore anymore. Mark Andrews was proving to be the better fit for that offense, that offensive style. Meanwhile, Austin Hooper was leaving, and probably with a better contract than Atlanta really wanted to pay him for, ended up going to Cleveland, I believe, right? I believe so. So at the end of the day, this is a very, very, very bad draft class of a tight end. So because of that, tight ends are kind of at a higher priority now as far as draft picks are concerned, because you're not going to find one in this draft class. Well, with the exception of the kid from Notre Dame, but other than that, it's really slim pickings at the tight end position. So Atlanta needed somebody to replace Hooper. And the Baltimore Ravens had an abundance and could really use another second-round pick. So I think this worked out for both teams at the end of the day.
All right, interesting take. Norm, I'm going to kick this back to you before we move to the next one, because we do got to keep it moving. But knowing now that he is still on his rookie deal and essentially – Atlanta is going to get him, you know, essentially with the fifth-year option, essentially 3 years, fairly cheap. Does it sway your opinion on good trade, bad trade for Atlanta, or good trade, bad trade for Baltimore?
Yeah, I think it tips for Atlanta for sure. Absolutely, Atlanta got the better end, but at the same time. You know, Baltimore, it's not like they get – I mean, you can make an argument he gave it away, but I think they basically just got another high draft pick and they want to do something with that. But, you know, Ty could be right. There could be a major setback, you know, by having that disguise leave now. So, but at the moment, yeah, Atlanta definitely, I think, wins on that end.
All right, guys. So we're going to talk now about trade number two, and this – This actually, I believe, was the first trade of the day. I heard about this right after the NFL legal tampering period was upon us, and that is that the Arizona Cardinals were able to acquire DeAndre Hopkins for David Johnson and a second-round pick. So let me set the premise here for you guys, because I want to be fair to both organizations, because I know we have some Houston Texans fans, and I know we have some Arizona Cardinals fans that listen to the show. One of them specifically asked me to talk about this particular trade, and that is Houston sent a fourth-round pick, their own fourth-round pick, so we're talking back into the fourth, and DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona for David Johnson and a second-round pick. And for Arizona, it's about middle of the pack, guys. So with that said, I know the pressure cooker is mounting here. I can hear the lid toppling a little bit. But, Norm, I'm going to start with you. Give me your honest thoughts, good, bad, and different. Who won this trade, and who got better in this trade?
I'm going to tell you right now, I think Houston's really going to suffer by losing DeAndre Hopkins. He's a piece of that offense that just could not be given away like that. And my only looking into this, because I looked into why would you do that, and I guess it's because there's a rift slowly brewing between O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins. So I, as a coach, I get it. He's like, I'm going to get rid of this, do this, David Johnson, I think the only reason that happened was because it made sense financial-wise to eat this contract and give this. But at the end of the day, the biggest loser really is DeAndre Hopkins. He's going to Arizona, who I think Kyler Murray is not the real deal. I don't think Arizona is the real deal. DeAndre Hopkins just got cast away like that, and Houston's definitely not better for doing it. So it's a lose all around, and it's baffling.
All right, Ty, keep the lid on the pot. I'm gonna come on over to James Switzerland. That's your new name on the show, James or Switzerland. Everybody, we make everybody happy here. So, did both sides win this trade, in your opinion?
No, not really. So the only way that Houston breaks even in this trade is if David Johnson returns to where he was 4 years ago. Now, don't get me wrong. I understand what the thought process was in this trade. It's not a good thought process, but they're seeing DeAndre Hopkins' cap number for the next 3 years at $13 million+. They're looking at a incredibly deep draft class for wide receiver. They can go at 15, grab somebody great, and take that second-round pick and fulfill some other needs. Meanwhile, getting a very low floor, very high ceiling running back in David Johnson. So I can see what they were thinking. I just don't agree with it. This was a loss in my eyes to the for the Houston Texans overall.
Well, I'll tell you this: there's no wide receiver in the draft that's going to come anywhere close to DeAndre Hopkins' production. You can draft three or four of them; they're not going to come close to what DeAndre brings.
I will tell you this, man. I will tell you this, and this is the God's honest truth. And I told Ty this 2 years ago, and Ty, you could tell me if I'm lying. We were literally talking about fantasy football, but I said DeAndre Hopkins is the best wide receiver in the league. And that was when Odell Beckham Jr., everybody said him. That's when everybody was talking about Antonio Brown. For my money, DeAndre Hopkins is still the best receiver in the game. But I'll save my comments. I think it's the floor is now yours, Ty. Just remember, this is a 60-minute show. Tell me your thoughts on not just coach, but executive Bill O'Brien's decision to trade DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals. Trust me, I'm just as mad as you are because I'm a Niner fan.
Wait, hold on. First off, I'm going to get at you for saying it's a 60-minute show. I'm not a rambler. I say about seven words, and you come and eat for me. So that's one. And second,
what was your seven words?
No, hold on, Norm, and I'm mad at you because I put my plate down, and you spooned out of my plate and said, DeAndre Hopkins is a piece of that offense. No, DeAndre Hopkins is that offense. Like, I don't want to make this a bad look toward Deshaun Watson, because I love Deshaun Watson. Don't get me wrong. I respect him at the quarterback position. But I think a lot of the situations that he would get in the jams, he could scramble and buy time and just know that number 10 is there lurking, and he can just put it up there, and it's a fight. Hey, I could go back to the huddle and talk to the guys, or I could talk to the coach and be like, hey, coach, at least it was a good idea. You know what I'm saying? That security blanket is now gone, and this is something that bothers me because, one, you bring a piece in David Johnson, and I know this may anger James a little bit, but David Johnson is now injury prone. And I hate to say it because I'm a Lion fan, but my Lions are the ones that started all of that rumbling of him being injury prone. So it's like you're bringing this guy to Houston, and they need a running game. They need a running game. Now, don't get me wrong, they need a running game, but you're bringing a guy that was the ish years ago. I want to say 2 or 3 years ago. Now it's like you have to see if he still has that in the bag. And now you know for a proven fact that DeAndre brought it every game, no matter which corner was there. You got people like Jalen Ramsey that said he is the toughest receiver to cover, and you get rid of him. This is the same Bill O'Brien that watched everything mess up in New England. They got rid of him. They started winning championships again. Like, this is Bill O'Brien. This is the man that he's up under. So you're telling me that Deshaun Watson and David Johnson are the guys to win the AFC South now, while the Titans got stronger with Tannehill, which I want to see this continue because he played it half a season, or you got the Colts and we get a first start with them. And this is something that me and Brian talked about with them getting a quarterback potentially. I don't even want to spill the beans on what Brian had dished out for the quarterback, but – and the Jaguars, I hope they do get better, but they lost a good amount of pieces, especially in their back end of their defense. But the AFC South is going to be competition every game, especially division-wise. So that I think that's a huge mistake for them to make. And I mean, like just like Brian said, this is a 16-minute show. I could go on this for the rest of the show if I wanted to.
Basically, Bill O'Brien's like the new version of Chip Kelly. He's selling the house. It doesn't work. Yeah, he's making a huge mistake.
Hey, whoa. Whoa, Norm. Don't be talking
about Chip Kelly.
Don't be talking that poorly about Chip Kelly. Hold on. I got a few things to say about this trade. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're not really paying attention, turn your radio up and pay attention, because this is very important. Houston fans, I really want you to pay attention. Black Zach Morris, pay attention. I know you said you're going to tune in because you're going to want to hear this. If you're a season ticket holder, you should sell them. This team is not winning more than 6 games next year. They will not win more than 6 games next year. I said that. DeAndre Hopkins, like Ty said, was not a piece of their offense. He was their offense. No receiver in the NFL has been targeted more times since 2015 than DeAndre Hopkins. He's been targeted at least, not average, at least 150 times every single year with a high of 207. Let that sink in. He's literally the guy that Deshaun Watson goes to when everybody's covered. He's literally the guy that he goes to when he needs a critical third down picked up. He's literally the guy that he goes to even when he's triple covered and he needs to score at the end of the game. I think a lot of people in Texas are going to be very disappointed with the results, because you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think Deshaun Watson takes a step back. I think that coaching staff's going to take a step back. You can't take the emotional leader off a team and expect that team is not going to feel some type of way about that. This is a playoff team, guys. You take a playoff team and you take a key cog and say, yeah, it's not even a re-signing hit. Yeah, we're going to trade him away for a broken-down running back that wasn't even the starter on his own team. That's a problem. And it's not a financial reason. James, I heard you mention about the finances, because, yes, DeAndre does have 3 years left at $12.5 million, which, oh, by the way, is extremely reasonable for a number one wide receiver. Go look and see what Odell Beckham Jr. is making right now. David Johnson's making $12 million this year, and he's a backup. He is a fucking backup. Excuse my language. He's making $10 million next year in his age 30 season. If you're telling me, do I want to give $21 million to David Johnson or $35 million over 3 years to DeAndre Hopkins, it ain't even close. I don't care about the second. I don't care about the fourth round pick, but I will tell you this, and I think this is important, and I know I'm going on time, but I think this is important. All you people out there that were bashing Chucky for trading away Amari Cooper for a first round pick, bashing him for trading Khalil Mack for two first round picks, well, I can't wait to see you line up right now and to bash Bill O'Brien, because this might go down as one of the worst trades in NFL history. And at least Chucky got a first-round pick for Amari Cooper, who, oh, by the way, whether Dallas fans or Oakland fans want to admit it, isn't half the wide receiver that DeAndre Hopkins is. I don't know. I don't get it, but you know what? I'm going to stop the rant there because, like I said, we only have so much time in the show. So,
he's at me because I know this is what I think that they're looking at, like the hype. I don't want to say the hype because he's proven. Deshaun Watson is proven. But I want to say the aura around Deshaun Watson, where you have people saying he's the Michael Jordan of the draft, so on and so forth, and the big aura that's around J.J. Watt. To me, and I said this to Brian before, the best player on that Houston Texans team was DeAndre Hopkins. And let alone if he wasn't the quarterback or the vocal leader, I think emotional leader, especially with what the story, and this is what drove me to be even more of a fan of his with the story that came out last year about him and what happened to his mother. I was like, I hope every game he played, he scored two or three touchdowns. Just wanted to go to the end zone and get to her. You can't tell me that receiving corps didn't feed off of him trying to provide for his mom or something like that. Like, and you get rid of that like nothing ever happened. Deshaun, I want to see what Deshaun says next. Like, does he approve of it, or is he like one of those guys that will say next man up and we got to move on? Of course, he's going to politically say that and be politically correct, but I'm not buying it. Like, I want to see his body language more than him just saying it in language.
Listen, the last 3 years, DeAndre Hopkins has been a Pro Bowler each year, has averaged 105 receptions, over 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. David Johnson averaged 94, you heard that right, 94 attempts as a running back, averaging less than 4 yards a carry. There's really nothing to talk about here, boys. So I'm not sure what Bill O'Brien's doing, but whatever it is, if I was a Houston Texans fan, I wouldn't be happy with it, I'll tell you that much. But we do got to move on because we got a bunch of stuff to get to, and I think it's only fair to get some of these other hot button topics on there, and we might have to extend this show tonight, Ty. So I do want to talk about the San Francisco 49ers. They trade DeForest Buckner, All-Pro defensive tackle, Pro Bowl defensive tackle, to the Indianapolis Colts for a first round pick, number 13 overall. And I've let Norm lead off on this. I want to give him a chance to maybe rant at the end. So with that said, Ty, I'm going to let you lead off on this, and then James, I'm going to bring you in on it. Ty, what's your thoughts on the Niners trading DeForest Buckner for a first round pick?
Brian, I love you, bro. Like I really do. You my big brother. I do. But this 49, I don't know if I really want to just – I more or less want to just go to the front office, since that's what you are about, being the front office guy. This is the same 49er organization that went to the Super Bowl and lost the Super Bowl basically off of an overthrown jump ball to Crabtree. If Kaepernick would have looked left, Randy Moss was sitting in the back of the end zone, that would have been a game-winning touchdown. But he didn't look left because the blitz was coming. He couldn't – I guess the hot route was Crabtree at that given time. At the end of this game, they get rid of 22 individuals from that team, including watching that coach walk away and go to Michigan, where he hasn't done anything in Michigan, and then put all of the onus on Kaepernick, like Kaepernick just didn't lose half of the offense and half of the defense and expect him to get them there, and he got to the NFC Championship game anyway, right? But they lose to Seattle, right? So this is the same organization that did that, and they get to the Super Bowl again. They're up, and you watch Shanahan crash this party on that while that defense was doing a phenomenal job up against probably the most high-powered offense I have ever seen. And I think the only offense I could compare to that is 2008 Patriots. You got high speed all over the field, and they had them at 10 points in the fourth quarter. And you watch the people leave there's no way. We have to come to some agreement. Come talk to me. Let's crunch numbers and make this happen and chase success again. They might end up, he's now gone. They might lose their coach and salary as well. Like, they have a lot of stuff that may end up happening with this 49er organization, and it's sad that they're watching a big piece up front that was doing damage with the organization and probably another emotional guy go to another team. Like, I just don't get this Niner front office. Not the team. That team did excellent last year. Like, I give you kudos, and I love that we got a Chiefs fan here and a Niner fan. That's great, but I just don't understand it. I think that's a bad move. Why not? If it's not broke, don't fix it. It wasn't broke. The broke part was the head coach or whoever was calling the offense in the Super Bowl.
All right, James, what's your thoughts on the Niners trading DeForest Buckner to the Indianapolis Colts for a first-round pick?
So you and I both know this. We've been looking at this for years, right? The NFL draft is the quickest way to cheap talent. And the Colts found themselves in a position where they found a lot of cheap talent throughout the draft over the past couple of years. They need a single one or two pieces to get that jump over and become real contenders in the AFC. Meanwhile, if you're looking at the San Francisco and their draft situation, they have their first round pick at 31, and then they don't pick again until the fifth round, pick 11. So they needed, if they're going to sustain this level of success over multiple years, they need to find a cheap source of talent. And this is where that 13th overall pick goes. They are going to be hard sellers to garner, hopefully, when it's all said and done, they'll keep their 31 and they'll just continue to drop back from that pick, or at least this is what they're hoping will happen. They'll sell on the cheap and they'll get their second and third round picks back and be able to expand throughout the next couple of years. That's their goal. Whether it works out or not is going to really depend on how the draft kind of lines out, whether they're able to build off of those picks or not. But I have a very strong feeling that the San Francisco 49ers will not be using both of their first round picks this year.
Great points, James. I do appreciate you having some insight on that. Norm, I'm going to give you a crack at this before I give you my thoughts on this. What's your thoughts on the 49ers shipping DeForest Buckner to Indianapolis for a first-round pick, number 13 overall?
All right, before I answer, I have one question for you, Brian. When do they have to give Kittle his contract? Is that next year?
Yeah, so Kittle will actually, they can enact actually at the end of this year, he would, like next year, he'll probably work on it this year, but they actually technically have one more year with him.
Okay, well, there's the issue. The problem with the 49ers and why they did this has everything to do with money. They got about $16 million in cap space. That's not a lot of money. You got to sign all your draft picks. That takes a little bit here or there. D. Ford takes $15 million. They just signed Armstead and extended him, and he's at the cap number for this year is $6 million, but I'm sure that skyrockets next year. Okay, and then you need to pay Kittle by next year. There's just not enough money to go around. And where the 49ers made their mistake, I'm going to be honest because he was a Chief, is D. Ford. They gave him way too much money for a guy who's been injured. He's got the quickest first step since Derek Thomas, in my opinion. He is a very good player, but he's limited. And I think that's where they missed out. I think they'd have been better off keeping their pressure up the middle and Buckner. But, you know, if you try to cut Dee Ford now, it's a $6 million dead money hit. So you're kind of stuck with him. You just signed him last year. So this was just a matter of not enough money to go around. And it's unfortunate, but I kind of expect the same thing to happen with Chris Jones in Kansas City. As much as it pains me, there's not enough money to go around. And so I think they got some good value for it. And good luck to the Niners. I think they're still a good team.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Ty. And listen, you know, DeForest Buckner was definitely one of my favorite Niners. The way he went about his work, the fact that he came in and from year one was really a talent to be reckoned with. He was an All-Pro, totally handled his business. But really, what it comes down to is a little bit of what Norm said and a little bit of what James said, which is they only had about $16 million in cap space. If you look at the contract number that DeForest Buckner wanted, there was rumblings since before the Super Bowl that he wanted $20 million a year, which,
oh,
as you guys
it.
Know, the
he
only
got
person,
it.
Correct. Yeah,
the Colts
that.
Paid
but
that
the
money.
Person, correct. But the only person at defensive tackle who makes $20 million a year is
Aaron Donald.
Aaron Donald from the Rams. And let's be honest, as much as I love DeForest Buckner, he's not Donald. He's never going to be a 20-sack-a-year guy. He will help collapse the pocket. He does not have the same type of first step that Donald does. I mean, realistically, you could say every single year that Donald is the defensive MVP. He just doesn't have enough talent around him on the defensive line to allow him not to be double-teamed. And DeForest Buckner had some of those problems early on. But with him making $21 million and him being strictly a defensive tackle, I think that that's really what probably prevented the Niners from keeping him. Now, the fact that they got a first-round pick and they have that second first-round pick because somebody's going to want a fifth-year option probably on a quarterback late in a round. Like James said, we do not have a second, third, or fourth-round pick because of the trades for Dee Ford and for Emmanuel Sanders. So they had to find a way of replenishing the stock, and as much as I didn't want to see him go, if you have Dee Ford and you have Nick Bosa and you have Eric Armstead, who's a double-digit sack guy, a defensive tackle, and DJ Jones comes back as your nose tackle, who was an absolute stud last year, I think we'll be okay. I think we'll be okay, but they're going to have to figure out a way to shore up the secondary a little bit, and they're going to have to figure out some way of getting a receiver to catch the ball, and that's the reason why I think that number 13 overall pick could be huge when you see guys like CeeDee Lamb, like Jerry Jeudy, you know, and some of these other guys, the bona fide guys that really have the potential to be a number one receiver. Now, I know they may not be there, but I think that that was just as important for the Niners as getting in the ballpark, because at 30, 31, you're not even sniffing the ballpark on a guy like that. So it's painful to see him go, but at the same time, I can honestly say that this is a win-win for both clubs. I think $20 million a year for a defensive tackle is a real tough pill to swallow. I do want to talk about some key free agent moves, guys. If I miss any key ones and you guys want to bring them up, let me know. But I'm going to just run through these real quick. So Larry Fitzgerald did sign the one-year $11 million contract with Arizona. Kenyon Drake was placed with a transition tag by Arizona. Atlanta did make the play for Hunter Hurst, as we all know. Michael Brockers agreed to a three-year $30 million with the Baltimore Ravens. There is one other trade that we did not talk about, and guys, we probably should because it was fairly large, but Calais Campbell did get traded from Jacksonville to Baltimore. And Calais Campbell, even though he's older, and I know some people probably don't think it, if you look at the numbers, he's still a stud. Matt Judon did get franchise tagged. We didn't really talk about a lot of the franchise tags, but he did get franchise tagged. Quinn Spain, a starting offensive guard for the Buffalo Bills, signed a 3-year, $15 million deal. Russell Okung came to terms with the Carolina Panthers on a deal that the terms have not yet been disclosed. So we'll see how that goes. Danny Trevathan, linebacker for the Chicago Bears, formerly of the Denver Broncos. He signed a 3-year extension worth $21 million. A.J. Green was hit with a franchise tag, so he's going to be stuck in – I mean, he's still going to be playing for the Cincinnati Bengals. Jack Conklin, as much as the Tennessee Titans wanted to retain him as an offensive tackle, he actually jumped ship, signs a 3-year, $42 million deal with $30 million guaranteed from the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland wasn't done there, though. They also signed Austin Hooper on a 4-year, $44 million deal with $23 million guaranteed, and got themselves a backup quarterback in Case Keenum, 3-year, $18 million. Dak Prescott was hit with a franchise, exclusive franchise tag, so he cannot negotiate with anyone else. Dallas did sign their tight end, Blake Jarwin, who was the backup last year behind Witten, but I believe he's probably the more athletic and the more deserving tight end at this point. Denver Broncos, they did obviously acquire in a trade with the Jacksonville Jaguars A.J. Bouye, the corner, for a fourth-round pick. They also signed Graham Glasgow, the offensive guard, 4-year, $44 million, $25 million guaranteed. Ty and James will ask you a little bit about Glasgow here in a minute. The team did place a franchise tag on Justin Simmons, who graded out as a top-five safety last year for Denver. Green Bay, the only real big move that they made, guys, they did secure Ricky Wagner, offensive tackle, 2 years, $11 million, in case Brian Bulaga does leave. The Houston Texans, we've already told you about David Johnson. They also came to terms on a 3-year, $36 million deal with the Colts. Or excuse me, 3-year, $36 million deal with Bradley Roby. The Indianapolis Colts, not only did they acquire DeForest Buckner, but they also were able to agree to terms on a 2-year, $33 million deal for Anthony Costanzo, which is a relatively good price for him. Jacksonville Jaguars did place the franchise tag on Yakman Ndakwe, who I think everybody agrees will not play a single down for the Jaguars, but like Kansas City did last year with D Ford, I think you're going to see him be shopped around and probably eventually had for a second or third round pick. Kansas City Chiefs did place the franchise tag on Chris Jones, defensive tackle, and they did pick up the team option on Damian Williams. The Las Vegas Raiders did sign Nick Kowalski, linebacker, to a 3-year, $21 million deal. And I'll be honest, I don't know who the kid is, but 3-year, $21 million makes me feel like I should know who he is. The Chargers signed Austin Eckler, running back, 4 years, $24.5 million. He's being paid like a starter now, boys, so I think he will be the starter. Hunter Henry, tight end, was placed with a franchise tag, so he is off the market. Trey Turner, offensive guard, formerly of the Carolina Panthers, has tentatively agreed. The Chargers have tentatively agreed to acquire Turner from the Panthers in exchange for Russell Okung. The Miami Dolphins signed Eric Flowers, former offensive tackle of the New York Giants, to a 3-year, $30 million deal that includes $20 million guaranteed. Most people remember how atrocious that Eric Flowers was as an offensive tackle, but last year as an offensive guard for the Washington Redskins, he actually graded out as a top 15 run blocker as an offensive guard, so we'll see how that experiment goes. Byron Jones, the former Cowboy cornerback, he agreed to a $17 million per year deal, which makes him the highest paid cornerback right now with the Miami Dolphins. Shaq Lawson also signed a contract with Miami Dolphins, 3-year, $30 million. And Kyle Van Noy, 4-year, $51 million, $30 million guaranteed, also goes to Miami. So they are getting themselves some New England talent. Miami, Minnesota Vikings, they were able to place the second-round tender on restricted free agent Eric Wilson, linebacker. He started for them. Anthony Harris was slapped with a franchise tag. They're starting free safety. Devin McCourty agreed to a 2-year, $23 million deal with New England, $17 million guaranteed. Matthew Slater, the all-pro special teamer, agreed to a two-year, $5.3 million deal with New England. Joe Thuney, this is kind of interesting, guys, just because we know how New England feels about the franchise tag. Joe Thuney, offensive guard, was slapped with a franchise tag from New England. James Bradbury, former cornerback of the Carolina Panthers, agreed to a three-year, $45 million deal with the New York Giants. Philadelphia Eagles signed Javon Hargrave, nose tackle, to a three-year, $39 million deal. 26 of that is guaranteed. Bud was slapped with a franchise tag by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Eric Armstead re-signed with the Niners on a five-year, $85 million deal. Seattle Seahawks did agree to sign Greg Olsen on a one-year, $7 million deal. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers franchise tagged Shaquille Barrett, who led the league with 19.5 sacks last year, and they also reportedly were able to come to terms with their other edge rusher, Jason Pierre-Paul, on a two-year, $27 million deal. Derrick Henry of the Tennessee Titans had the franchise tag placed on him. Ryan Tannehill of the Tennessee Titans agreed to a four-year, $118 million deal that includes $62 million fully guaranteed. Wow. And Dennis Kelly, offensive tackle, agreed to a three-year, $21 million deal with the Tennessee Titans. And finally, boys, Brandon Sheriff, offensive guard, had the franchise tag slapped on him by Washington. And Wes Sherwitz, offensive guard, signed a three-year, $13 million deal with Washington. I'm going to come to you first, Ty, because I think I already know where you're going. But after that laundry list of what I just said, what pops out at you? What deal or what team pops out at you first day of free agency?
Right now, the biggest thing to me is Dak. like I'm stunned on everything that just happened down there in Dallas. Like, the deal they were trying to give him, what he turned down, and he got the exclusive franchise tag, and he's kind of stuck in Texas, or from what I'm hearing, he could pull the Le'Veon Bell and sit out this season, which I don't know which way they should go. Another interesting one is the Kyle Van Noy situation. I think he was a good piece fitting in with that New England cavalry and the defense, and then he goes to Miami, and they're trying to rebuild. So it goes like you're at the top of the food chain and kind of settling down to be, you know, somewhere meddling for food. So I don't get that one, but I understand he's trying to get paid, and I know he probably wouldn't have got that payday in Massachusetts. So to each their own, I don't blame him for getting paid, but definitely I'm stuck on the Dak Prescott situation.
All right, James, I'm going to come over to you. Out of all those transactions that I just talked about that, you know, obviously they all occurred today. Some of these were previously agreed upon, but out of all these arrangements that I just mentioned here on day one, what sticks out the most to you?
So to me, it's the Jimmy Graham signing by the Chicago Bears for a multitude of reasons. The biggest one being they haven't gone out and gotten a different quarterback yet. So they're going with Mitchell Biscuits for another year. They're running out there with $4 million and not a lot in draft capital to make a move themselves a new quarterback. So they're rolling with, it seems at least to me, that unless they get something on the cheap, right now they're hovering at right at $4 million. They don't even have enough money right now to sign all of their draft picks, I don't think, unless they're missing something that I'm not quite thinking of right now. They're rolling with Mitch Trubisky again, which after last year, I can't fathom anybody going with the league's worst starting quarterback again. I was really scared because I thought they were going to get Teddy Bridgewater, but he backed out at the last minute. So it's safe to say that at this point, the Chicago Bears are going to be the bottom of the NFC North again.
All right. So I'm going to come over to you. Give me your thoughts. Just for those that are listening in, the Bears had roughly a little over $4.5 million of cap room before the Danny Trevathan signing. So James is right; they're going to have to do some work just to be able to sign their draft picks. Never mind trying to sign a Teddy Bridgewater or a good quarterback. So Norm, I'm going to come over to you. After all the transactions that we just talked about from today, what's the one or two transactions that kind of stand out to you from today?
Yeah, since you let Ty and Matt go first, I kind of lost track. Can you repeat the transactions again?
I like it.
Yeah. Okay, so what
sure,
stood out to me, yeah.
You pointed it out too,
Brian, and I thought it was the most interesting transaction, and it just really threw shade to everything else they're doing. What the fuck is Miami doing giving Eric Flowers money? That guy is garbage. and I, for the life of me, couldn't believe, you know, they made a couple good signings, but they're a far ways away from being good, but they got the money, bringing some talent. But the Eric Flowers signing, that just threw me way for a loop.
They're going hard on Pro Football Focus grades is what they're doing.
I guess, but that didn't make sense. The ones that stood out to me, though, obviously because I'm a Chiefs fan, so I look at who the competition is Baltimore obviously getting Calais Campbell on a sneaky little trade. I think they scored on that, even though Calais Campbell's towards kind of the backside of the hill. It's still good land. And then they also had an under the radar signing of Brockers on a 3-year deal. That's a lot of push up the middle and gives them a lot of flexibility with Judon. But the Baltimore Ravens are in phenomenal cap shape. They could even keep Judon with the $15 million tag and still be fine. But it gives them leverage to where if they can get some good compensation, maybe they do trade Judon. So Baltimore, real sneaky there. It's kind of scaring me.
Well, for me, guys, it's very clear, and that is, I'm going to say two teams, but really it's the signings. Number one, Tennessee. You gave Tyrone Powell's favorite quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, 4 years at $118 million.
Oh my God.
Hold on. What in the hell is Dak Prescott going to get? He just got $30 million
right.
a year.
Right. That's true.
Dak is going to want 50 now. He just reset the market. $30 million a year, and you only have to have 6 good games in your entire career.
Right. That's pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. And then you know what? I killed them all last year. Anybody that knows me knows that I said, I'm not buying the hype on Cleveland. Slow down. You got to see these pieces. You got to see how they're going to work. Yada, yada, yada. Well, you know what? This year I'm actually buying into the hype. I like what Cleveland is doing so far. If you look at the signings that the Cleveland Browns have made, it's almost like they have a new front office there because the signings make sense. What was their worst position last year? Offensive tackle. What do? They go out and get Jack Conklin, who's by far, it's not even close if you look at the Pro Football Focus grading chart, the best run-blocking offensive tackle in the league, and he's still a plus pass blocker in the league. So that is going to be a huge upgrade for him. What else do they do? They go out and get Austin Hooper. So they get their young quarterback a weapon to throw to. And by the way, they're able to keep Kareem Hunt in the building, and they get Case Keenum, who's going to be a good journeyman to help develop, hopefully, Baker Mayfield. And in case they need him, he's already shown a propensity to be able to win games. So I really like what Cleveland has done. If you have to overpay, this is my line of thinking, guys. And this is how I feel about free agency. Like, everybody goes into free agency like they're walking into Price Choppers, right? Or they're walking into Pick and Save like they're looking for a bargain. You're not going to find a bargain in free agency. You bet. Your best bet is you know you're going to overpay, so you might as well get the best player available at the position. That's my opinion. If you're going to go into it and I'm like, hey, I need a quarterback, I'm not going to sign Case Keenum. Now, I know I just said it was a good signing for them because he's not going to start, but I'm saying if you're going into free agency and that is your number one option, then you shouldn't be looking for a quarterback in free agency. So I like the Jack Conklin signing a lot. I like the Austin Hooper signing. the number one tight end, the number one offensive tackle. I think they deserve a ton of kudos. And when you look at how poor that offensive line played, guys, look at they're drafting in the top 15, and there is at least five or six bona fide first-round talents at offensive tackle, you know, between Wirfs and Thomas and, you know, all the kids that are there. They are going to get themselves another offensive tackle, and they are going to solidify that offensive line. And between Chubbs and Hunt and Hooper and Odell Beckham and Landry, this team might actually be decent this year. And if not, you know what? It's not going to be because Mayfield doesn't have the time. So I'm just going to say that. So I was actually
– Well, real quick, Brian.
Go ahead.
Let me run with that. So yeah, I like everything Cleveland's done, but they got one problem. Mayfield's trash. He's basically the same as Johnny Manziel, but he's not on drugs. I guarantee you, Baker Mayfield gets benched, and Case Keenum was brought in for a reason. Baker Mayfield's trash. He's not going to pan out in the NFL.
Oh my gosh. Well, why don't you tell me how you really feel?
Exactly.
I mean, it's not wrong.
Yeah.
Here's this is the one thing I feel about Baker, right? I think Baker ran into a situation where he got two, I want to say, strong-headed receivers that came from different locations to come to him, where he actually made a splash. And I think he was more or less trying not to enforce his will on these guys. This is the year he's going to have to show that he could take the bull by the horns right now, because if he keeps letting these guys do what they want to do out there on the field and he looks nasty trying to get passes off and end up with games with 8 for 22 and 100 yards passing, they're going to have to go on from Baker Mayfield. So this year it says a lot. And I'm going to give him a pass because I don't think Freddie Kitchens was the guy to be running that show anyway.
That's also true.
And here's something that I would like to point out, because I do understand the comparison, right? They're both shorter guys. They both scramble around. They both maybe rub you the wrong way with their cockiness or their attitude. But I don't have a dog in the hunt. I don't necessarily care about either one of them. But I think it's incredibly disrespectful to say that Baker Mayfield and Johnny Manziel are even remotely close to the same, even in the same stratosphere, because number one, Manziel on his best year threw 7 touchdown passes and completed 57%. And that was the highest completion percentage he ever had in the NFL.
Andre.
Baker Mayfield in his rookie year threw for 3,800 yards and 27 touchdowns, guys. 64% completion. Look, I'm not saying he didn't regress last year. I'm not here to say he's a top 15 quarterback, but what I'm telling you is he's shown that he can get the job done. Now, if they surround him with the right talent and they give him some time, I think that he'll be a good player, and that's why I think he is going to show he'll be a better player this year. But I will tell you this, Case Keenum and Baker Mayfield are not even in the same stratosphere talent-wise. Baker Mayfield's problem is all upstairs. Case Keenum's problem is he don't have the physical tools to be a starting quarterback. That's my opinion. Ty, what's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I still believe in Case Keenum because he did good in that Minnesota run. Like he left as soon as he got there. Like he got comfortable with Minnesota, and they sent him a deal out there in Denver, and everything went by the wayside. You know, like, give him another year to run the show. The Minnesota Vikings kill me. This is the same situation that happened for one of the more memorable seasons I ever seen with Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham lights the scoreboard on fire in 1998, and then here come the Dallas Cowboys and say, "Hey, Randall, come on down here. We're going to pick you up right after that season." And Randall was crap after that. And they did the same thing with Case Keenum. So, I don't know. And to be fair to Manziel, you can't even tell me the receivers he had when he was there in Cleveland. You can tell me the receivers that Baker Mayfield had.
You really want to go there? Because Josh Gordon was pretty good.
And he was on drugs, too. Since this is the model that North keeps running with, and they both were partying on drugs. Like, so now, So it's like, where you all been?
I'm just saying. Look, listen. He had Josh.
Hey,
Gordon.
Josh Gordon never did any better than when he was with Johnny, right?
Right.
That,
no, actually, that's not true. No, the year that he was a Pro Bowler, if I'm not mistaken, that was the year that Cody Kessler played half the year, and then Baker Mayfield came in the second half of the year. But yeah, he put up something ridiculous like 1,500 yards. So we can't say he didn't have a bona fide one, because Josh Gordon was the best receiver in the game in 2015.
Okay, rack your brain for the rest of the receiving corps. Rack your brain for the rest of the receiving corps.
Andrew Hawkins.
Who?
Pretty sure they have
you served cricket soup and you didn't even know it.
You asked me a question. I'm telling you.
I know, Brian. But I'm telling you, like, you're putting up the guy that you're naming right now outside of Gordon is like it's like me saying Pinkston right now.
Hey, listen, you know what? As a quarterback, you were told from the time you're playing Pop Warner that you're supposed to take chicken shit and turn it into chicken salad. You know what? For all the bad things people want to say about Garoppolo, who did he have to throw to? Who did Tom Brady have to throw to? They both went 12-4. So I ain't buying the I ain't got no one to throw to thing.
These guys are not Brady. Like stop that. You now this
yeah,
is the chicken.
You're
practice.
Making a big jump from comparing Baker. Like that's an even bigger jump from Baker Mayfield to Johnny Manziel than
yeah,
from Baker Mayfield to Tom Brady. I mean that's a much bigger leap in my opinion.
There you go, controversy.
Okay.
There you go.
Hey, Brian, I got a great idea. Brian, I got one for you. Brian, I got a great idea. We'll turn this one into a show. It'll be Baker Mayfield versus Johnny Manziel, but we also, to fill time, we got to go Freddie Kitchens versus Jim Tomsula.
Wow.
Jim, if you're going with head coach, Jim Tomsula wins hands down. I don't think I've ever seen an interview. Opening interview where the head coach was unsure of what he was supposed to say.
Oh, my God, that's a good one. Look, Kitchens look bad, too. What do you mean? Kitchens said he don't know what he's doing. Freddie Kitchens was in a press conference that he doesn't know what he's doing. You have the nerve. Freddie Kitchens soundbite when he said he didn't know what he's doing sounds worse than Sam Darnold when Sam Darnold said he sees ghosts.
Speaking of which, the Jets have been spending a lot of money lately.
I know.
Ty was nice enough to extend the show. Norm, are you good to run another 25 minutes with us?
Oh, at least. There's just so much to talk about.
Oh yeah, right. Easily 25 minutes.
Okay, so here's what I want to get into right now, guys, because I think that this is worth talking about. You know, the whole I don't want to talk about Baker Mayfield and all that right now. What I do want to talk about, though, that I do think is worth talking about is let's start at the top of the QB position, and let's start with Tom Brady. So reports have come out, as you guys have probably heard. We now know we're probably trying to start the Tom Brady to San Fran rumor to gauge interest, but supposedly Brady's number one choice was to go to San Francisco. They weren't having it. So it sounds like he has a extremely good offer on the table from Tampa Bay, or he can go back to New England. And it sounds like Oakland might be a wild card. It sounds like they're still in the hunt. So with that said, I'm going to start with you first, Norm. I want you to tell me where you think he ends up and where you think he has the best chance to win.
Yeah, so I really don't think he's going to go back to New England. And we don't know much other than the conversations haven't been well. And I just really think it's a bad marriage now between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. And I don't think he's going back, which sparks a different conversation of who the hell's going to throw the ball in New England. So the team that made the most sense, the Titans, went off the board. And I'm telling you, Tom's not playing for money anymore. So it don't matter how much money Tampa Bay throws at him. I just don't see Tampa Bay as a – they're not even a top six team in the NFC to compete for a Super Bowl. Tom wants to win. So the only scenario I can still think that would make sense to me is I say Las Vegas Raiders, because Gruden's going to talk them into it. And as we speak, they're signing Mariota to what should be a comfortable backup deal. And I think they cut loose Carr, and that'll cost $8 million in dead money, but a $13 million savings. So actually save money. And Brady
hold
comes
on,
in
Norm.
For 2 years, and Mario takes over the rest.
I just want the Houston Texans fans to listen to this next part, because I think it's really important, because I really feel like Oakland would probably trade that T word and get actual value for Derek Carr. They'd probably get like a second or third round pick, as opposed to trading your best player for nothing. But that's a question for another day, I guess. Ty, Tom Brady, where does he end up? Where's your gut telling you he's going to go? And then what do you think is the best fit for Brady at this point?
I got to do this on a personal level, and it's fitting that Mr. Controversy is here, right? And I remember in 2011, I said, Brady wouldn't win another Super Bowl. This is after him winning his third Super Bowl. I said, he won't win another Super Bowl. He won three more and lost, what, like one or two in the process. No, he didn't lose no more, did he? No, he lost one.
He lost to Philly.
He won three more in the process. I had to fall in line and understand I was watching greatness. If it wasn't for Tom Brady, the Patriots would still be ringless and still remembering the butt-kicking they took from the Bears in 85. They're crying after what Brett Favre and Desmond Howard did to them in 96. Brady deserves to walk away from Gillette Stadium with a 200-foot statue outside of Gillette. There's no way that he needs to go anywhere else. Like, who complains? Like, okay, Brian, over the both of you, Norm and Brian, you guys are calm and cool, collected with what y'all did this season, right? Y'all both got their Super Bowl, had successful season. Who cries about a 12-4 season? Like, who? Like, I'm taking 12-4. Like, you guys will take 12-4. That wouldn't be shabby. Who looked at 12-4 and said, oh, he's having an off season? His whole receiving cavalry was hurt. Wait, Gronk just left. The receiving cavalry was hurt. Edelman is his go-to guy. He's 5'9", and he's no longer a secret. Like, wait, what? Like, people need to get real. And he's doing this at 42 years old? He's going on 43 in August? Like, stop. He's giving you everything. Belichick need to calm down. Like, who are you going to go to in a draft that's going to be there for you late in the draft that's able to fill Thomas Brady's shoes? Like, get out of here. There's no way he needs to go anywhere. I couldn't see him in Las Vegas with his kids growing up, and he just bought a house right next door to me, basically, because I'm in Stamford, Greenwich, Connecticut borders. He just bought a big old mansion out here, so I'm wondering what that is about. Or him going to L.A. and opening up the Chargers, or going to Bruce Arians, or I couldn't see him anywhere else. He started there and told Robert Kraft himself, I'm the best decision you have ever made in your life.
James, what's your thoughts? Same question. I think Brady deserves a complete round table panel here. What's
sure.
your thoughts? Sounds like there's only three teams left still in on Brady.
So if we're leaving it to three teams, which I have to agree, it has to be one of these three. I have to go back to New England, and here's why. When you think about Bruce Arians and how he coaches an offense, the last person you think about is Tom Brady. Tom Brady is a great quarterback, the greatest of all time. He's not a guy who's going to be throwing down the field 20, 30 times. 20 or 30 times a game, you know? He has always been a guy who has worked the middle of the field, worked the edges, and every once in a while hit one deep. That's kind of like has been his MO for years. I cannot see him go with as much talent, and probably with the exception of 2007, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers might be the best wide receiver / tight end core that he's worked with outside of 2007. But it's just not a match schematically unless Bruce Arians is willing to throw that all away just to get Tom Brady, which he might be. I could definitely see the the Raiders being a team that could be that, but I don't know. Like, once again, this is another thing where it just doesn't seem right. I don't know why, because this is a team that could that has the capital to bring in a bunch of offensive pieces and surround Tom Brady with a great team that could win them a Super Bowl. If he's even as good as he was last year, which was a down year, an odd down year for it's not a down year for anybody else. That's a down year for Tom Brady, I guess. But then there's New England. It's where he's always been. And I think they're just jacking the price up because, yes, Tom Brady doesn't need any more money. He hasn't needed money his entire career. But this is his last chance to cash out before he leaves for good. And maybe he's just driving the price up and he's going to go to Robert Kraft and say, hey, I won you 6 Super Bowls. Now it's time to give me $30 million a year, $35 million a year, just to send me off after a great career. I've given up. I've been a under top 10 paid quarterback for my entire career in spite of being the best there ever was. Now it's time to pay me, and Kraft will pay it because he owes it to him.
So here's how I feel about this, guys, and I'm going to take a little bit different approach. James kind of hit on some of the stuff that I feel. So for that, kudos, James. But here's a couple things that I think is worth noting, right? So there's three teams. You have the Tampa Bay Bucks, the New England Patriots, and the Las Vegas Raiders. I have a hard time, and I've really, really thought hard about this logistically with the core nucleus group of talent that they have there in Vegas, the city, just kind of the culture, everything there. I have a hard time realizing why, whether you like them or not, why you would move off a 27-year-old quarterback to go to a 43-year-old quarterback to in a year or two go back to the draft, number one. Number two, I don't think that Bill Belichick and Brady's relationship is real strong, like Ken and Norm alluded to. I think that they've had conversations. I think that New England is all and Bill Belichick are always very prudent. Hey, this is what we're willing to pay you. We're not paying you for what you've done in the past. We're paying you for the quarterback you are now. You know, now you are a middle of the road, you know, quarterback, and so we're going to give you 1 year, $18 million, right? Something like that. And I think to Brady, it's an insult. I don't think you have to overpay the guy, but I do think that winning's important. And I think more so than anything else, guys, I think today is a major hit to Tom Brady coming back to New England. Let's just look at the facts. So of the top five tight ends and wide receivers, every tight end that Brady would have potentially wanted, whether it be via trade or via free agency, has already signed. So to get an elite tight end is not going to happen now. Whether it be free agent or through trade. You know, there's already been multiple trades. Greg Olson's already signed. Austin Hooper has signed. They're just not available at this point. Hayden Hurst has signed. So that's a problem for New England. Number two, New England doesn't have the greatest cap situation. And Tom Brady is going to want not only to get paid, which I think is understandable, but Tom Brady is going to want to get paid and have weapons. And with the Patriots having essentially about $20 million in cap space, it'd be extremely difficult to give this man $18 or $20 million and fill out the rest of the team around him. So I tell you that to tell you this, because keep in mind that what I said about this first day of free agency is probably what's going to put the nail in the coffin, in my opinion. So look at this defense. So Kyle Van Noy, who is a really, really good player, ends up going to Miami on a big, big deal, correct? They lose a safety in Patrick Chung. They've lost some other pieces there on the defensive side. I'm not saying they're going to take a huge fall back, but for sure the defense is going to be worse. For sure, the defense will be worse. It's a fact. So when you look at that, and you couple that with the fact that you look at Tampa Bay, the team that nobody is giving any credence to, and I do a deep dive, right? And I noticed that in no season has Jameis Winston ever, ever thrown for 4,100 yards. Not one season has Jameis Winston ever thrown for 4,100 yards before last year, where he threw for over 5,100 yards. He threw for over 1,000 yards more than he had in any other year. He had never had a season where he had thrown over 30 touchdowns. He led the league last year with 33. Now, if I'm Brady and I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this guy dropped back 620 times. He has two Pro Bowl caliber receivers in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. He's got an amazing tight end Smith. I can't remember his name. I apologize.
O.J. Howard.
Great tight end.
Yeah.
Or Howard, thank you, from Alabama. He's got a great tight end. The only thing this team is lacking is a running back, and between the draft and free agency, there are several top-notch running backs. I'm not sold on Ronald Jones. But then you look at the fact that they brought back their defense, and then you start crunching the numbers, guys, and I know I'm going deep dive on you, but just hear me out. This team was 7-9 last year, and the only team that had a positive record in the division was the Saints. I know the Saints are good, but Carolina's going to be rebuilding. There's zero qualms about that. I don't think anybody would qualm about that, and Atlanta's rebuilding. So this division is super winnable. And as you guys know, the first thing you have to do is win your own division. And I would make the argument that the Indianapolis Colts, or excuse me, that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' path to winning their division is probably just as difficult as New England's, because I think Buffalo is better, and I think New England's is worse. So with all that said, I think Brady's going to end up choosing Tampa Bay. I think there's better weapons. I think they have a better offensive line. And they went 7-9 last year, guys, and six of the games that they lost were by one score or less. Meaning if you remove Jameis Winston and you put Brady on that team, we're potentially looking at a 12-1 team. I mean, that kind of swing. You're talking six games that were one score or less. And, oh, by the way, down the stretch, their last six games, Tampa Bay went 4-2. So they played really good, even against good competition. They played San Francisco tough. They beat Indianapolis. They played really well. So everybody's saying zero chance. I'm saying I think Tampa Bay might actually have a shot at getting Tom Brady. So with that, I'll throw it back to you, Norm, for a final thought on that. I'm going to give the other guys here a quick shout-out, and we'll move on to the next guy.
Yeah, you know, like I said, it's, I do agree with the fact that there's no better place for him to be than New England, and it should end that way. I think Tom really wants to play. I think it's the whole Kobe and Shaq scenario. They both want to show they can do it without the other, and that's what Belichick and Brady are mulling over. And I think Brady's going to go somewhere just to show.
Wait, Norm, can I ask you a question? Come on, before you keep going, Norm, I want to ask you a question. And I want to ask the whole panel. I want to ask everybody here. Do y'all really honestly think that Belichick and Brady have a beef? Like, honestly, like even watching them communicate in Belichick's office and then breaking down. I don't know if y'all seen him break down Ed Reed and how he was a ball hawk and things like that. Yeah. These guys have a common respect for each other, and I feel like this is what they sell to the TV or the media. Like, do you really think Belichick and Brady beef? Like, they have a beef?
No, here's the thing. I don't think it's a beef, but if if the issue that at hand here is that Belichick, in my opinion, just saying this is all we can get you, and he's already looking to the next step, and Tom's like, well, feeling underappreciated. So it's not like it's anger towards Belichick and that, but Tom Brady's sitting here saying, well, wait a minute. You know, I mean, really, Tom Brady has a lot of leverage because, like I said, if they don't bring him back, who the hell's throwing the ball in New England? That's even a bigger problem for Belichick.
I've got the answer to that question. Just wait till it's my turn to come around. I've got to answer that question.
So, yeah, no, I think it's an interesting part that's going to play out. It's going to let the rest go. Yeah, Hoyer's. We'll see.
All right, James, go ahead, man. You were eager. Go ahead and jump on that, and then I'll give my thoughts.
All right, so if Tom Brady does not come back to New England, which is entirely possible, there's one player that's currently available in free agency that I could see going to New England and doing and having similar traits to Tom Brady, and that's Teddy Bridgewater. And here's why. One, Teddy Bridgewater has shown to be, when healthy, a fantastic quarterback, not only in Minnesota, which he was very good. I think people forget that. But also when he took over for Drew Brees' offense, which it was Drew Brees' offense, and still had the capability of winning. Now, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't always pretty, but they won. And he did good enough to win. Not only that, but Teddy Bridgewater is also – shown the restraint to be able to give up more money to go to a winning situation. He went back to New Orleans when the Miami Dolphins were going to make him not only the starting quarterback, but the starter. He went back at a backup role for less money because he knew that was a winning team and a winning culture and a winning situation. One of the big things that in my belief, don't get me wrong, he's super talented, greatest of all time, all that other jazz, but one of the most underrated portions of Tom Brady was being a well above average quarterback that was willing to take less money because he didn't need it. He would rather win than take money, and I think Teddy Bridgewater is of the same mold. And I think that if Tom Brady does not return to New England this year, Teddy Bridgewater will be a New England Patriot, and it will be almost sickening to me because it's almost like it's going to start all over again. Not quite to the same degree, but close.
So, Ty, to answer your question, first and foremost, I think Norm hit the nail on the head. I don't think that Brady and Belichick necessarily have beef. I just think that we all, whether it be through perception, whether it be through, reporting, whether it be just the way that we've seen him study and the way he talk about the NFL 100 and the study and you know, just how much time that he puts in on rules and everything else, I think that Bill Belichick is a very prudent person. And I think that he doesn't attach emotional value to players. And he's shown this many, many times, guys. This isn't new. It's just we forget about all the times in the past, like a guy, for example, like Richard Seymour. And New England fans were furious that New England essentially let him go. He was the heart and soul of that defense. And they let him go. And you know what? Yeah, he had another good year, but he was on the bat. He was on the wrong side of the numbers. And I think that that's where Tom Brady is now. Tom Brady is a great quarterback, and he still may yet prove us wrong and have a better year this year than he did last year. But make no mistake, he is not the best quarterback in the NFL. He is not even a top five quarterback in the NFL. He doesn't have the zip on the ball. He doesn't have the arm strength anymore. He doesn't have the mobility. So the question becomes, you're paying this man essentially for his knowledge, for his understanding, and for his anticipation. So it's hard to put a $30 million price tag on that, but at the same time, if I'm Brady, I'm like, hey, look, Ryan Tannehill just got $30 million. Ryan Tannehill. You know, six Super Bowl rings over here. So that's where it makes negotiating hard, because you have teams that are willing, because they have so much free agent capital, they're willing to hand out contracts. And like I said, I said from the very beginning, Ty, and I'll continue to say it, I don't think this is just a money thing with Brady. I really don't. I think if you look at all the truly great athletes, and for me, you guys know Kobe Bryant was my dude, they have a competitive hunger that is unmatched by anyone else. It's like a once-in-a-generation, like, competitive hunger. Jordan had it, and Kobe had it. And you know what? As much as I love LeBron, I don't think he has that same oomph that Kobe or Jordan had. Just that desire, that hunger, that second place was the first loser kind of thing. And I think that Brady has that. I think he has always had a chip on his shoulder coming out of Michigan, being a six-round pick, you know, having whatever it was, you know, nine quarterbacks selected ahead of him. I think he's always had that chip, and I think the only way that he gets satisfaction at this point is to win a Super Bowl, because if he falls completely flat on his face this year, it's not going to change the perception from anyone that knows anything about football that he's the greatest quarterback that's ever lived. But as Norm alluded to, it does change the perception on the fact that he could win a ring without Bill Belichick. Or Bill Belichick could win a ring without Tom Brady, because people forget about the Cleveland Brown days when he was a coach there and they weren't so hot. So, I mean, obviously every good coach that's a Hall of Famer had a phenomenal quarterback. Every phenomenal quarterback usually had a great coach. They kind of go hand in hand. But I think what the issue here is, Ty, is that Brady is looking for specific traits. Do you have legitimate wide receivers that can get open, you know, can get themselves open that doesn't have to be schemed open? Do you have a legitimate receiving threat at tight end that I can throw to? And I don't think, honestly, that New England can check any of those boxes, none of them. And so I think Tampa Bay, between the fact that they're going to be more aggressive, that they're going to show a desire to want him, that they're going to have a willingness to do what's necessary in order to coax him to Tampa Bay, and the fact that they were almost a 500 ball club last year, and like I said to you guys, had six games where they lost by 7 points or less, I think Tom Brady looks at that situation and goes, you know what? I want to go where I'm wanted. Because I don't necessarily, a lot of people have said this, you know, I know they talk about it on First Take, but don't think that in the back of Brady's mind that he hasn't forgotten the fact that Belichick wanted to ship him out 2 years ago and make Garoppolo his starting quarterback and basically craft kibosh that. So I think Brady would love, if everything was equal, to come back to New England, but let's be real. If you look offensively, things are not equal. I think that's why he leaves.
I don't know. And that's the one thing about Tampa Bay. They like to hit the long ball passes too. Like they like to extend the field to Evans. So it'll be tough. Just like you said, Brady doesn't have that arm strength. And he's 43. I get it. He's not going to make those passes that he used to when he was in his 30s and 20s. But he's still efficient enough to get those 5 to 25-yard passes and still dissect the defense. And plus his whole cavalry's gone down in New England this past year. But it would be interesting to see if he could get it done in Tampa Bay, if they would bring him there. I just don't feel like his legacy needs to end somewhere else. Like, Tanner's situation was different. He got hurt and went to Kansas City, and it ended that way. But Brady is basically still carrying the team while everything happened. Hernandez left, Gronk left. You pick a name, they left. Josh Gordon wanted to still smoke weed. Like, all of this stuff is happening. And then he's still the constant. I don't see him anywhere else.
All right, so last guy, and then we're going to wrap it up here, guys, and I'm going to try to keep this a little bit shorter here, but because we are running out of time. I want to talk about Phillip Rivers. So Phillip Rivers has been a really controversial guy this offseason. We've talked about him a couple times. San Diego has pretty much come out and said at this point that he's not coming back, that Phillip doesn't want to come back, and that San Diego is ready to move on. So with that said, and just considering the teams that are interested in New England and the fact that he wants to be on the East Coast, close to his family, we know that that's important to him. You know, essentially people have said, hey, I could see him going to Indianapolis. I could see him going to Tampa Bay. And then the question to you guys would be, hey, if Tom Brady leaves, do you think that Phillip Rivers gives it a thought, considering how much success Tom Brady has had there with Bill Belichick? Ty, I'll come to you first.
That would be one epic move, like one epic scenario, especially the way that he lost that AFC Championship game, torn ACL and all, for him to make the move to go up there. But I don't think he steps foot anywhere near Massachusetts. It was interesting on the team that you said, and I'm going to let you have it, but I don't think he comes to New England. I think he goes somewhere else. I still feel the intrigue of and I'm glad that you brought up the fact of Tampa Bay with Arians. Arians showed an interest in Phillip Rivers. I think that can work for Phillip Rivers, especially the style of ball that he likes to play. So I think that may be the better fit. But I know that you had a team up your sleeve as well for Phillip Rivers also.
Mention it, man. Bring it out. Let's the other guys.
No, I don't want to steal your dish. Norm
hey,
already took food out
listen.
Of my plate. I'm not doing it to nobody.
Hey,
Norm did it to me.
Listen. Hey, you know how Sports City works, man. This is a buffet here, baby. So I want to make sure that everybody has time to eat. Throw it out there so we can talk about it here before we close up shop. I want to make sure Norm and James have an opportunity to talk about it.
I throw it around. I'll let you speak on it. I got to be fair. I'm being fair. I believe me, all of the smoke and fire and food I had to put out here in the kitchen, believe me, I know how I get dealt with in here, and I know how to handle them at the end of the day. So go ahead. I'll get going back one day with Kansas City. His partner will come.
All right, so James, I'm going to come over to you. What's your thoughts on Phillip Rivers? Where do you actually end up seeing him going? And if Brady does go to, let's just say, Tampa Bay or even the Raiders, does New England become a possibility for him?
I've said it before. I don't see New England as a possibility for Phillip Rivers. I think that if they decide to move on from Tom Brady, if Tom Brady does not return to New England, Teddy Bridgewater will be the next quarterback of the New England Patriots. I very firmly believe that. Because is Phillip Rivers really going to take a giant pay cut to go to the New England Patriots right now? Not really. Not with the – like, he didn't do all that well in San Diego this last season. So I think that the Patriots would probably pass. But where does Phillip Rivers go? I mean, it's hard because there's not that many teams out there with significant cap space and a need at quarterback. Does New England really push that button and make it Jacoby Brissett sit behind Phillip Rivers? I don't see that. That's not their style. It's really not. So it has to be a team that's going to or needs to make a big splash and has the money to pull it off. And I don't see a team like that in the league right now, assuming Tom Brady goes to Tampa Bay. If Tom Brady goes to Oakland, then Tampa Bay is the destination for Phillip Rivers. But other than that, I don't think Oakland moves on from Derek Carr for Phillip Rivers like they would for Tom Brady. I don't think New England would pass up a cheaper Teddy Bridgewater for Phillip Rivers, unless Phillip Rivers comes around cheaper than a Teddy Bridgewater contract. They're going to look for an above-average quarterback who is cheap, because that's the solution they've gotten to winning. And, I don't know who he goes to. He might just retire. I might actually put that as his final destination, retirement. The broadcast booth.
Yeah, you know what? I that's definitely fair. Norm, what's your thoughts? Tampa Bay, the Raiders, and then like you said, if he leaves, ends up leaving, Tom Brady ends up leaving New England, does New Orleans become or New England become an option as well? What's your thoughts? Where does Philip Rivers end up?
Well, I'll keep it quick, and I'm going to go ahead and steal your thunder because it's the Colts. I mean, that's the number one destination, I think. They're already having talks on it. If he doesn't land on the Colts, then, yeah, I think Philip Rivers will look to go to Tampa Bay. But if he doesn't land at either of those two spots, he's just going to retire. And if for some reason Belichick gives Rivers a contract, that's just a total dickhead move to Brady.
Hey, I can see Bill doing that. If Brady signed in New England, I could see him doing it. But, yeah, I totally agree with you, Norm. I know that anyone that's listened to the show, I said that, what, 4 or 5 weeks ago, Norm, 6 weeks ago, that I thought Philip Rivers was going to the Colts. Back then, everybody was like, what are you talking about? It just makes too much sense. He has an existing relationship with Frank Reich from when he was the offensive coordinator in San Diego. He already knows the scheme. They've got a great offensive line. They've got a good running back. They've got good receivers. They've got an improved defense now. All they need is a quarterback, and Jacoby Brissett is a good quarterback, but I don't think he's ready to handle a championship-caliber team. And I think Rivers is. I really do. I think that if you look at the history of Philip Rivers in the playoffs, it's really unfortunate that this guy doesn't have a ring. I mean, 1 year he was in the AFC Championship, and I think and I could be wrong, guys. You can correct me, but I believe it was Nate Kading. He missed like 5 field goals, and
right.
Ended up losing that game by 3 points. There was one game in the playoffs where they were up by 21 points going into the fourth quarter, and the other team scored 24 points in the fourth quarter to knock them out. The defense just could not stop the other team. And it's like a certain amount of it you want to put on Rivers, but if you look at his numbers, and we've talked about this when we talked about the Eli Manning thing, Philip Rivers' numbers outside of the actual wins are a lot better than Eli Manning's numbers, but he just never had that kind of defense. And this could be that year that he has that defense. So I'm definitely going to go with Indianapolis. Well, with that said, boys, we talked about a lot of different topics tonight. So before we jet out of here, and I definitely want to start with James. James, give me a final thought, a closeout, anything that you think that we may have missed or anything that we should have talked about that maybe we can talk about next time. And we definitely appreciate you showing up. You'll definitely have to keep stopping by here on every Monday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time, 9 p.m. your time.
So, yeah, I think we've hit pretty much all of it. That I really wanted to get into today. I think that over the next by the time we kick up again next week, everything's going to become a lot clearer as far as what the big needs are, because a lot of the big names are going to be signed. Can't wait for next week, guys. Talk to you later.
All right, good stuff. CP Timeless, I'm coming over to you, your kitchen. I appreciate you letting me use both the ladle and the spatula tonight. Give me a final thought. Give me a final closeout. Anything that the good people should know about.
I just don't appreciate you letting Norm get up in my plate and start taking my food. You know what I'm saying? I don't appreciate this. You know, you Cali guys are too much. You know what I'm saying? Look, you told me to talk and now you're trying to cut me off. So I don't like the way people I thought it was I ain't mad at you. Ain't got nothing but love, all of that other stuff. But they show me they mad. But, you know, definitely, man, great show, man. I couldn't wait to get back in the kitchen. At least it's something to talk about. Everybody stay safe out there with this madness going on in the world today. There's pandemonium everywhere, including here and everything. And at least we get to talk a common ground and get to share this with my brothers. And I can't wait to come to Cali to meet Norm, even though I'm going to take his food this time. But on that note, tell us, tell a friend that this is Jeff again, and if they don't know, now they know.
Well, as you know, here in the kitchen, we do more of a buffet style, and tonight we did bring the heat, so the meals were slightly charred. Norm, I'm going to kick it over to you right now. Give me a final thought, man. I appreciate you holding this down with me week after week. I think we covered free agency pretty good. What's your thoughts, man?
Yeah, we did. Like I said, there's just so much action in this first week. We really didn't touch base on some of the veteran players that I cut that are probably looking at 2 to 3 year deals, looking for championships. So there's going to be a lot of pieces that can kind of fill in. And also sign and trade destinations for some of the guys who got tagged for trade reasons there. So, but like James had mentioned, another week of this is just day one. Another whole week of this will really start to fine tune a lot of pieces, and we'll see what happens.
Well, from all of us here at the Sports City Chefs, I just want to tell you here in a final thought. We really appreciate you listening into the show, the continued support, the downloads that you've been doing on iTunes. I appreciate the support and continuing to tell us that you enjoy the show. I hope this show has maybe given you a little solace, a break away, if you will, from COVID-19, the coronavirus. You know, we're all kind of dealing with it right now. Just make sure you take care of each other, take care of your loved ones. And as T.O. said, get your popcorn ready. Unfortunately, in this day and age, I'm going to change that to get your TP ready. And I'm not talking about TP Timeless. On that note, we'll see you later. Peace.